hour of your Wednesday edition of Justice and Drew is underway. We'd love to hear from you. 651-989-5855. #250 and saying TC&T will get you right in there to Sam as well.
Okay. On the phone, and if that's good, in the we'd love to hear from you part of it, Drew, I fear that I've made a horrible mistake.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I've now gone back to my normal Twitter account that has the appropriate muting of particular individuals because I seem to have lit a match. Oh, no. And so I knew that was a risky move asking some of the ardent anti-Trumpers their thoughts on whether or not they agree with the tactics that the, you know, congressional Democrats are using and the party are using of just sticking with going after Trump rather than focusing on the issues. And unfortunately now, you know, into the secondary accounts and the hashtag TC&T is not a place I want to be anymore.
Down the rabbit hole we have gone.
Yeah, this is people have now felt inspired and with a lot of words that I just don't simply have the time or energy for. Just want to say that up front. One more quick, just want to play just a little bit of it. This was the very beginning, and then we'll dive into to Gwen Walls before we talk with Jesse Kelly. This was the very beginning of that impeachment hearing, doing that thing with my fingers yesterday, and Corey Lewandowski's opening statement, which at the time, President Donald Trump had actually tweeted and thanked Corey Lewandowski after he made the statement because right. He was very appreciative of the comments that he made.
Chairman Nadler, Ranking Member Collins, and members of the committee, good afternoon. I'd like to start off by expressing my hope that today's hearing will be productive in revealing the truth, both to the committee and to the American people. For the record, and as you likely know, I have already testified before Congress on three separate occasions. I sat at length with the staff of the special counsel's office. There, too, my time and answers were given freely and without hesitation. I think in one form or another, I have already answered questions for well over 20 hours. So now here I am before the House Judiciary Committee to answer the same questions again. Just last week, this committee, over the objections of the minority, unilaterally changed the rules to make this an impeachment proceeding, which is very unfair. However, in the spirit of cooperation, I am prepared to move forward today. I'd like to start by recounting the events that brought us to this point. My story of joining the Trump campaign, working through a historic election, and continuing to have the privilege to be part of the greatest political movement in our nation's history. I present this summary in the interest of truth and transparency to the American people, the very same reason and rationale that this committee offers as the basis for today's hearing. Growing up in a blue-collar, single-parent family in Lowell, Massachusetts, I learned the value of hard work. And that work ethic helped me to put myself through both college and graduate school prior to becoming a congressional staffer, and ultimately a certified peace officer in the state of New Hampshire.
We'll stop it there. Look, the Democrats can do, obviously, whatever it is they want to do. Okay, that's okay. And whatever they think that their party, that their base wants them to do. If they're going to do impeachment, then move forward. There is nothing new out there, right? Because and then think there's a difference here. Right. And then we were talking about this and asking those that don't like Trump to tweet using the hashtag TC&T. And I realize there's a bit of a difference in sort of the way this can be approached. I think on one hand, Drew, you're right. I think the majority of the Democrat base wants them to move forward with impeachment. I think the difference is what they're doing here. And I think even the Democrat base sees through it. The information's been vetted. It's kind of like Kavanaugh. The information's been vetted. They've already interviewed Lewandowski. Like you said, this is three separate times already. They've had the Mueller investigation, right? They spent all the money. They did the report. All the information about potential wrongdoing by the Trump administration is already out there, if there is any. So if you're going to move forward with impeachment, then just move forward with impeachment.
There's nothing stopping you.
Yeah, just be done with it. I mean, I think that's what your base wants. Now, you're going...
Nancy Pelosi is like the only House Democrat smart enough to realize that it would be a mistake. Right now, anyway.
Right.
I don't know if that'll hold true. I'm still sticking with my prediction that they're keeping actual impeachment chambered until the Democratic nominee is decided and we are into the general, and then they can use that as part of the general, knowing even if there's no meat to it whatsoever, but if their candidate can get out there on the campaign trail and say, look, you know, you got a president right now who is facing impeachment. You know, last time around, they said that, do you really want to vote for somebody who's under FBI investigation? And the American people rejected it. Well, do you really want to vote for somebody who's going to end up being impeached anyway? Of course not. I think that would be actually a pretty effective tool for the Democrat to be able to use. And I think that's why they're keeping it chambered.
I disagree with it being effective from this standpoint. Because the only way that they can make that happen is to continue with nonsense like what happened yesterday. And there's a long time between now and the end of next year. This can easily turn into what the Republicans did with Obamacare, where they voted 60 times to get rid of it. And even the Republicans, even we were sitting back going, dude, enough already. I don't care that you keep voting. You don't have the power to get rid of it. Right. You keep voting to get rid of it. It doesn't matter anymore. You've made your point and move on. And they tried to do something similar. Well, if you go and vote this person in office, well, no, I'm sorry. You've exhausted that. And so if that is the tactic, by the time they get to, you know, the nomination of Amy Klobuchar, it's gonna have gone on too long, right? Because clearly she's going to be the nominee, right?
Clearly. I mean, the path is just right there laid out in front of her. It's super simple.
Follow the yellow brick road.
Yeah. Yeah, no. Can you imagine the final night of the Democratic National Convention on, you know, primetime TV, every network, and then it's Amy Klobuchar taking the stage.
Hey, Houston, we do have a problem. We welcome Snow Woman.
The president actually sent out a tweet. He made
no.
I hope that
no.
When she, I hope
no,
that when
Amy, you can't use that joke anymore.
I hope that when she takes the stage, they let fake snow rain down upon her.
Yeah, she walks out. We actually have audio from the future. She walks out, and these are the first words out of her mouth.
It's when you guys are supposed to cheer.
Come on, everybody. You're supposed to cheer.
There's a picture floating around Twitter right now of Amy Klobuchar at some union event or whatever. And apparently Bernie Sanders was speaking, and the room was packed. And then Bernie Sanders was done speaking, and everybody left. And that was when Amy Klobuchar was supposed to speak. So you got this picture taken from the back of the room of an literally empty room. Like the first two rows maybe have like 20 people. It looks like it's hard to tell. Zoom in really far.
I had to squint at the thumbnail to see if there was even anybody close to the stage.
Oh, no.
And then, you know, on the big screens that people in the back of the room would use when the room is full of people to see what's happening on the stage, you see Amy Klobuchar up there on the stage talking to somebody.
Oh, no.
Like, how sad must that have been if you're Amy Klobuchar?
We have a little bit of audio to share with you that hopefully we'll have some time to get into before we talk with Jesse Kelly. Let's go here, though. This is out of the Pioneer Press. Gwen Walls and close advisors had it all mapped out. Promote a PBS documentary about the rigorous college coursework for prison inmates, a concept they want to replicate in Minnesota, and let the First Lady step out as the leader on criminal justice issues. Walls and the governor's office staff helped choreograph the plan last May, according to interviews and recently released documents. It involved sneak peeks of the film for state decision makers months ahead of its airing on public television and panel discussions. A four-page briefing memo prepared by the governor's office said an objective was to create awareness about the First Lady standing on the issue of criminal justice reform and the policy work she's involved in the administration. Not all, though, went according to plan, and instead the event revealed the risks associated with the First Lady taking a prominent role in a high-profile policy area. By multiple accounts, panels that coincided with screening clips from the documentary turned tense when the moderator pressed participants about race before a restless audience. Later, a top aide to DFL Governor Tim Walz sought to make sure a video made of the forum didn't get circulated.
Hmm. Journalism 101, right?
Right.
Right? Oh, no. The high-profile public figure, political figure, is not pleased with how this played out. We better delete it.
And there's some framing in this Pioneer I mean, on top of the deleting part, which is the big deal, and we have a press release here and some comments from a Minnesota Republican Party Minnesota Chairwoman Jennifer Carnahan we'll share with you. But the framing in the article is really interesting as well. So you get further into the piece, and it says, with the legislator moving into crunch time in May, Gwen Walls appeared on TPT's Almanac to talk about the documentary rollout. She did other interviews arranged with newspaper and television reporters. A vital component of the screening of the extended clips and accompanying conversation before the large audience at the TPT headquarters in St. Paul. There was a VIP reception and a pair of panels. One featured the filmmakers, okay, under the bright lights in the television studio, with sound and camera professionals on hand. Those present said the discussions gave participants a chance to tout the film due to air on PBS and promote the education program. Some of the questions by the moderator intended to ask circulated days ahead of time with the Department of Corrections and the governor's office. So they had a bunch of questions already given to them, right? Not a big deal. It's all sort of standard fare. According to an email, they included what galvanized you to take up an interest and proactive stance in the prison system. Could BPI be part of the prison systems in Minnesota? This is where the framing gets weird. But Morrison, right, the moderator, picked by TPT for the job, didn't stick to that script. The discussion careened into an uncomfortable area, racial disparities and criminal justice. The framing here makes me laugh a little bit, right? So unless there was some sort of set standard guideline that there would not be any other questions asked, this is pretty standard fare. You're at a panel. You got a moderator. They're asking questions. I don't know. I mean, unless it's incredibly scripted, it doesn't surprise me at all that there would be other potential questions that may come about in the middle of the discussion. The way that the Pioneer Press frames it, though, the discussion careened, yeah, right, as if to take the onus off of the answer in this and speak more to, oh, it's just, you know, the moderator went off the rails,
right,
and asking some other questions. Right. It's all their fault.
Throw the moderator under the bus.
Exactly.
Right. That's not, look, and that's, maybe that's what happened, right? Maybe, you know, maybe this was more scripted than it ended up being. And certainly the guy who did the moderating, he came out and in the story, he even says, like, well, I saw an opportunity to take this down an interesting path and I went with it.
Sure.
And that's what you should do. Like, you should be open to do that. And if you're going, and I know Gwen Walls is the first lady. She was not voted into any office. She was not elected into any office, right? But when you're first lady, and you decide that you're going to start championing an issue.
Exactly.
Okay? And you're welcome to do that. That is not uncommon. You know, presidential first ladies of governors all over the country, they've done this, so it's not uncommon. You need to be prepared to not only, you know everything about that issue and get challenged on it, but you are opening yourself up for criticism. So this is absolutely 100% fair. What happened at this forum?
It's no different than anybody calling the show. You call the show, mm-hmm, right? There's the assumption, right? You're gonna be on the air if we put you on hold and Sam lets you know. And you have to know that if you're stepping out of your normal fare, heading into an arena where we discuss issues, and there might be pushback on that. So Morrison said that he felt compelled to ask the panels about race after clips. After clips the audience saw included mostly inmates who were racial minorities. He said the first lady opened her remarks talking about incarceration as an education issue. She said this is a money issue, this is a geography issue, and left it at that. A lot of people began to clap. I was kind of confused because I thought she was going to say this is a race issue, Morrison said. However, she left it at that and people clapped. And then somebody from the audience said, it's a race issue. Morrison said others in the studio chimed in as well. And then I turned to Gwen and said, what do you have to say about that? What do you have to say to that, Gwen? And she said she was implying race. The discussion shifted away from race, but Morrison brought it back there. I said, can we talk about prison education, about talking about race? And then the panel just goes silent. And again, I'm just like, and again, softballs. And now the audience is a little razzed up because they're not. Nobody's answering the questions. Wall said she wanted the audience to hear more personal accounts of the barred participants. She was taken aback. I think everybody was super, super surprised at kind of the approach, she said. Wall said the direction of discussions went left many people, herself included, feeling unsatisfied. I don't know that there were any true valuable conversations, she said. Walls was adamant the conversation about race is important and one she's ready to be a part of.
We got a couple people that want to chime in on this. 651-989-5855. We'll get to the part of the story where the TPT decided to just delete the tape because, I don't know, some people were a little upset.
30 on 103.5 FM.
Twin Cities News Talk, Justice and Drew, along with Sam, and we're going to find out what it is she learned today, assuming she's learned anything. I thought that's really on us. After we talked with
Jesse
Kelly.
Yeah, I've learned that you're a monster. With you and your pizza scissors.
Anyway.
Or steak scissors.
End of the show, Sam. Yeah. End of the show. That's when you get your time to tell us what you learned.
Drew, I can't cool down.
I know. Well, Drew, I don't know if you heard or not, but when you last time you left, she informed me she's not going to D.C. with me next week. She's actually going to Germany with you now.
Oh, okay. I can't handle steak scissors.
Because she can't handle steak shears.
I can't. They're scissors. Not a sheep.
Quick point of clarification. The article that we've been working from, deleted video of Tents Forum demonstrates risk of First Lady's policy push. That was actually out of NPR. I mistakenly grabbed the credit from the Pioneer Press from the photo that was included in the article.
Gotcha.
So
gotcha.
There you go.
651-989-5855. Before we continue with that story, Mark in St. Louis Park. Good morning, Mark.
Gentlemen, I've got the article, but the last paragraph really struck me, and I always hear this phrase. I don't get it. The governor's wife said, I'm going to acknowledge who I am. I'm a middle-aged white woman with privilege, with white privilege. Uh-huh. Is she talking about herself? I grew up, I'm Caucasian. I didn't know any white woman that I'm related to with any privilege whatsoever.
Oh, Mark, you're just not aware of your privilege.
You're not woke.
That's all.
Wake up.
You have to be woke, and you have to have somebody explain to you all of the ways in which you are privileged. Look, the idea of privilege, I'm teasing you, Mark, a little bit. I do think the idea of privilege is, at the very least, incredibly overstated.
I don't know about you guys, but as a white woman, I feel pretty privileged every day.
Well, you have the best kind of privilege.
Yeah.
Why?
It's not white, it's not black, it's not necessarily about the color of your skin. The most powerful form of privilege is attractive person privilege. I'm not even joking.
No, it's like, not even being glib. It. Yeah, it's
nobody
pretty girl
talks
privilege.
About it. It's not pretty girl. I would even say just attractive person.
Attractive person, just, sure.
If
sure,
you're
sure,
an
sure.
attractive person, like you can, and I don't mean to, don't take this the wrong way, Sam. I don't mean this directed at you at all. But if you can coast through certain aspects of life because people just like having you around because you're pretty and you're nice and you're attractive and you're good looking. And this is for men and this is for women and this is for all colors and everything. Attractive people have it so much easier.
And by the way, and I know we're not going to wipe out here, but just as a quick point of that, because we should have a conversation, a lengthy one about this. The privilege, whatever, the blank privilege, whatever, it's a moving target, right? You can actually create privilege just in your attitude.
Yes.
If you go to an established
privilege.
Yeah, if you go to an establishment or you head into a situation, if you present yourself in a better way, you know, a more enthusiastic way, in a kinder fashion, you can open up the world of privilege doing that thing with my fingers. It is such, and there's privilege on there's a million different levels, and yet we zero in on the ones that are most politically advantageous to grab onto.
Yep.
Drives me nuts.
Yeah. So it is. It's a ridiculous thing, and it's used right now to, you know, make white people feel guilty and to basically silence them when discussions of race start to come up. When you get a bunch of, you know, woke liberal, you know, guilty white liberals in a room and then a person of color tells them, you know, well, hold on, you know, check your privilege. They're all going to shut up and listen.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just kind of used as a bludgeon right now.
There's a member of the extended family that went on this sort of, well, you know, I'm a white guy and I've got my white guy, my white male privilege and all that. And it was nothing more than an excuse for the poor decision making that they've done in their life and to feel bad for themselves and to turn themselves into a victim. Real quick, and this actually, I'm glad that Jennifer Carnahan mentioned this. She, in the quote about this deleting of the video of Gwen Walls, she said this: "It is beyond concerning that Twin Cities Public Television deleted unflattering footage of First Lady Gwen Walls at the behest of the Walz administration. What was unflattering, one may ask? Apparently, Walz was not prepared for the conversation of race to be brought up during a panel discussion about problems within our criminal justice system.
Right.
And that's the question that I had. Reading the story and looking at it and all that, I didn't quite wrap my head around what the big deal was and why it needed to be deleted.
Yeah, apparently it was just embarrassing. That's all. And the people got mad. Somebody got mad. And it's not necessarily clear who, but somebody got very upset at TPT, at how the panel went. And they contacted TPT and apparently laid into them, got an angry call. And then the management of this Twin Cities public television, a taxpayer-funded, supposedly news organization, deleted the footage. Because, and the quote in the story is, there were ruffled feathers. People's feathers got ruffled, John. Gwen Walz's feathers got ruffled. Well, you know what? If you're going to decide that as First Lady, you're going to delve into a controversial, difficult topic like criminal justice reform, I'm sorry, but like Michelle Obama took on, you know, like fat kids.
Right.
Like that's a pretty easy topic. And even she got a bunch of grief for it, right? She took on obesity. She took on childhood obesity. Like the most controversial thing she did was she changed school lunches. I know a lot of people got upset about it, but when you really sit back and think about it, it's very minor.
Sure.
It's not a big deal at all. But she still got a lot of grief for it.
Yeah, well, look at Melania Trump.
Melania Trump was just like, be nice to each other.
Be best.
People want to murder her. It's crazy. She goes, just be nice to each other. It's like, I hate you so much. How dare you?
You want to talk about
She's entering into criminal justice reform, which is a very, very, very difficult and controversial topic. And I'm not saying that she's not equipped to handle it. I'm not saying that she shouldn't dive into it. But be prepared. Be prepared for some controversy.
Well, yeah, and talk about privilege. Governor Walz privilege. It's not like there weren't people there in the. That's what is so utterly ridiculous about this. It's like, delete the video. Okay, there were a bunch of people there that saw it, right? Yeah. Okay. The stories are going to be written about it. Way to go. Bang up job. And that's what cracks me up is that actually, to me, justice was served in this regard. Because they went so far, can you delete it and get rid of it? Yeah, and guess what happened? What everybody else who's rational knows would have happened. Right. It ended up getting covered at length. If you hadn't asked to delete the video, we wouldn't be talking about this right now.
Well, and let's give credit to Brian Baxton and NPR. This is a great story. It's really well done. It's really well put together. But it was somebody within TPT that tipped him off that said, hey, by the way, you should request some documents. You should request these emails because this thing happened. So, even within TPT, I think there's people going, what the hell? Why are we doing this? Why are we kowtowing to the Walz administration? It's another example. Like Ilhan Omar has the Star Tribune, says, can we shut this down with Blois Olson like we did at the Star Tribune or like we do with the Star Tribune? And now Walz has TPT. It's another example of the of members of Minnesota Media. I'm not going to cast too wide a net here because there's some good ones out there, but it's another example of Minnesota Media kowtowing and being in bed with the DFL and refusing. It's the Esme Murphy effect. She's like the queen of this. When a DFLer's in trouble, they go to Esme Murphy and she comforts them in her nice, warm, soft bosom and strokes their head and tells them everything's going to be okay. And the Star Tribune, shuts things down on behalf of Ilhan Omar and TPT deletes embarrassing footage. And it doesn't even sound like it was that embarrassing. That's the thing. It sounds like she just sort of was caught with her flat-footed, unprepared to talk about the aspect of race when it comes to criminal justice reform, when it comes to incarceration and education. She wasn't expecting those questions, so she didn't know how to answer. That's not that big a deal.
No. It should be expected. You said it before, and you were right. She wasn't elected to anything. She just happened to marry Tim Walz, again, I think most people, including I would have been like, okay, she's a first lady. She didn't exactly know that. That's not her forte. She didn't enter into politics. She didn't get elected anything. So what? Give the woman, a bit of a pass in this regard. I really do feel like, and I'm gonna turn this back to, and we're gonna talk with Jesse Kelly coming up here in a few minutes, our fellow iHeart radio host. But I really do feel like this is another sort of example of the effect that Trump has had. I'm fascinated by the way that media handles their reporting now. And I feel like now this isn't necessarily anything new. I'm sure the DFL has been doing this, you know, in the state for quite a long time. But I do get the sense that there is more rational in their minds excuses and arguments to be made to do this in a country where Trump has been elected. Because I feel like so many people use Trump as the example of, hey, well, we can do this because, you know, we've got this guy sitting in the White House and look how awful and horrible this is. And you look at the way the mainstream media treats their stories on a number of different levels. I feel like it emboldens this type of behavior and this type of favoritism, because the fallback is, well, you know, we're trying to do what's right. We're trying to save this state. We're trying to save this country from the evil dictator sitting in the White House.
Right. That's dictator with 3 K's.
I'm sorry. Yeah, triple K. Yeah. D-I-triple-K. Tater. Just so we're abundantly clear.
Yeah. And that, look, I mean, this is why a lot of, you know, DFLers, like, it's really difficult to get them to come on this show. Like, they've got such a cozy media environment here where they get lobbed softball questions, and when things don't go the way they want, they're able to shut it down. They're able to shut coverage down. So why would they ever subject themselves to any sort of critical questioning? You know, Ilhan Omar is a great example. You watch her just, you know, she's just gallivanting around as a congresswoman, only doing the softest of softball interviews.
Yeah.
And anytime somebody starts to question something, she just calls it a right-wing smear.
Or she runs away.
Racist, or she runs away.
And she's very fast.
She's sprightly. She's very quick. She's
very quick on her feet.
Yeah. It's all that maroon. It's a Maroon 5 dancing in the video. It's got her in really good shape.
Every time she pops up in the video, it just takes me right out of it. Bums me out.
What? How many times do you watch that video?
Jesse Kelly's on the way. Oh, you know, can we delete the audio? Can we delete that?
No. Nope.
Can you delete this for the podcast?
Nope.
Can you get rid of that? Well, there's two different versions of
PT is nicer to the Walz administration than your own producer is to you.
So yeah, it's not a huge surprise. There's two different, Drew. There's two different videos. There's two different versions of the video. There's a version one and a version two where they use different. And she's in both.
I don't need to know any of.
She's in both of the versions, and they're very enjoyable until she pops up, and it's like, ugh. Just really ruins it for me. She's not even there. She's on the green screen. She wasn't even there next to Adam Levine. They just put her in there.
Oh.
Makes me want to take shears to my. Jesse Kelly, Twitter provocateur, humble man, fellow iHeartRadio host, will join, well, join Drew and Sam.
.com.
Final segment of your Wednesday edition of Justice and Drew is underway. Welcome back to the program. Tomorrow on the show, it is Thursday, and that means that we are thrilled to have our good friend Katie Pavlich from Fox News join us in the 8:35 segment. Always a lot of fun with her.
We should be speaking with Twitter provocateur Jesse Kelly, although I believe we are having a difficult time getting on the line, although I think I see her mouth moving.
Sam's doing her own show in there with him now.
She's talking with him. And yeah. I think she's got. And now we can officially make it official. Officially.
Watch out! Watch out, Jesse! I've got it all, and I'm getting more, but I never thought I'd be the mom, cause you know I'm so humble. I'm so humble. I'm so humble.
Fellow iHeartRadio host, Twitter provocateur, and the humblest man I know, Jesse Kelly. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Here just to check on him and make sure he's okay.
That was on me.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
Okay. Let's try this again.
Good morning, Jesse.
They didn't have your mic turned on quite yet. Oh, Jesse.
I'm still here. I'm on my way to the doctor just to check on him and make sure he's doing okay.
To check on the doctor?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Does the doctor call you and be like, hey, Jesse, I haven't seen you in a while. Can you swing by? I miss you, buddy.
Only when he needs an expert.
So we've been talking about that whatever that impeachment hearing thing was yesterday, and playing some audio from Corey Lewandowski, and we put out a request to the fans of the show, so friends of the show or those that listen but generally like us and agree with a lot of what we say. Fans of the show are those that listen really hard but do not agree with what we say, and most of them don't like Trump. So we put out a request using the hashtag TCNT to let us know if they, who don't like Trump, are on board with the consistent push against President Donald Trump in things like, we'll say, Kavanaugh on a sidebar, you know, the rehashing of that, and these impeachment hearings and Corey Lewandowski and going back over the Mueller report. If they want that, if this is what the base wants, who don't like Trump, or if they would rather they moved off of that and focused on the candidates, the issues, and electing somebody. So I'm curious what you think. And I'm talking about sort of the surface level Twitter, you know, Twitter sphere, I'm talking about the actual core base of the party. What do you think that they really want? Are they interested? Are they the only ones? Are they watching these impeachment hearings with any sort of interest?
I think they are. I think the base of the Democrat Party is radical, more radical than it has been probably ever, and that they are the one driving this bus. I think Democrats, I mean, to their, look, they did it to themselves. The media did it too. They spent 2 years telling that radical base, we're going to impeach him, we're going to impeach him, we're going to impeach him, he's going to go to jail, Russian collusion. And then the Mueller report dropped, and it was just nothing. There was nothing to it. And now Frankenstein is already built. Frankenstein's walking around, and that they don't have the ability to pull the reins back on that now. I believe that they are being led by their own creation now, and they can't stop it even if they want to.
You know, that's really interesting, because it raises another question in my mind, too, and that is, you know, when you look at left or right, okay, if you go Democrat or Republican, I think we shift often depending on opportunity, right? A lot of people, I think, expected or thought maybe not a lot, but many people thought that President Donald Trump would be pushing far-right agendas. They've certainly portrayed him as being that, and I think that we can say with confidence that, well, you know, if the Democrats weren't so crazy about it, he probably would have worked a lot with Democrats on a lot of issues that would have made Republicans upset. That being said, if we had a very staunch right-wing Republican in the White House with an opportunity to really push forward a far-right agenda, I think a lot of Republicans would step up and be like, yeah, let's go for it. But we shift depending on who's in power. So I'm wondering, when you talk about the base of the left, I think you're on to something. I think there is a big portion of the left that honestly would like to go far left progressive, but oftentimes they move a little bit more center based off of what they can go and accomplish. But considering all the candidates have moved so far left and progressive, the base is showing what they truly, truly want at the end of the day.
Oh, yeah. And look, hope can work the wrong way, too. I mean, everyone thinks hope is a good thing. Think about the false hope they poured on their base this entire time. So instead of, like you said, Donald Trump is not some staunch conservative.
No.
Now, look, he's governed that way mainly because everything he does, they're against him. He's just like, screw it, I'll screw you all anyway. So I'm thrilled with his presidency. But he's more of an anti-liberal than a staunch conservative. They absolutely could have got him to do things that they liked that would have driven the base on the right absolutely insane. But this militant commitment to he was never even legitimately elected has completely ruined them. It's ruined them for the last 2 years, and it doesn't look like they're planning on changing courses for the next 2 years.
Yeah, look, here's the thing about President Trump that a lot of people just don't ever seem to really grasp. You know, when he tweets out nice things about Kim Jong-un, for example, you know, President Trump seems like it's very simple. If you're nice to him, he's nice to you. If you're not nice to him, he will be meaner to you than you were to him.
He's given them ample opportunity because of things like that, Drew. There, because he always wants to make the deal. You know, that's how he sees himself as a big deal maker. He'll say nice things about genocidal monsters like Kim Jong-un. He'll approach Democrats with, you know, an amnesty deal. People forget that. He approached them basically giving Democrats everything they've ever wanted on immigration in exchange for some kind of border security. And Democrats said, absolutely not. You're a monster. I mean, Johnson's son has reached across the aisle far more than I'd ever like him to. And look, they have to oppose him now. Their base demands it. So Donald Trump could propose, you know, everybody adopting a puppy, and Democrats would vote against
it's true.
More.
Yeah. Yeah. We've talked about that before when it comes like the quickest way to go ahead and get Planned Parenthood, defunded is to have Trump come out in support of Planned Parenthood.
Democrats would run away from that.
And it's such a dangerous place to be politically for a party when you're the Democrats and you're in that place, because it gives you no solid message. You're not giving people one solid platform to stand behind. What has the Democrat message been for the last 3 years? They didn't unify and decide, hey, we're going to reach out to this group of voters or do this or do this. They reached out and said, we're anti-Trump. Well, that'll only get you so far. I mean, that'll get you a lot of campaign donations by some little old lady in an email, but that's not winning you elections.
Nancy Pelosi has remarkably been one of the only ones that really seems to understand, you know, what this president is about. And like, I think she's actually been pretty effective sort of navigating these waters. You know, she hasn't jumped into bed with the crazies of her party. And I was thinking back to an article from last week regarding gun control, where she sort of put this offer on the table of like, hey, if you pass, if you sign universal background checks into law, if you commit to signing it, you know, we'll do a big joint ceremonial, bill signing thing. Well, with photo ops, and we'll take pictures with you. And it didn't work. You know, it wasn't Trump, at least so far, hasn't taken the bait on it. But when I saw that, I was like, that's actually really smart, because that seems like the kind of thing that Trump would respond very well to.
She's been really smart. I mean, look, for all the problems you and I both have with Nancy Pelosi, Drew, she's a salty old dog who's been around this parade for quite a while.
Yep.
Nancy Pelosi knows what she's doing. I actually made the argument, and I believe it 100%, that Ilhan Omar actually has a legitimate chance to be deported for immigration fraud. And everybody said to me, you're crazy, you're crazy, you're crazy. And I said, no, I'm not, because I believe Nancy Pelosi wants her gone, too. I believe that wing of the Democrat Party realizes that these radicalized freshmen, this radicalized base they have, it's killing them. It's going to kill them at the polls. They want them gone so they can get back to getting some wins.
That's a really interesting. Can you expand upon that a little bit more? Obviously, with our conversations around Representative Ilhan Omar, considering the fact that we're actually sitting in the district that she represents. Present a little bit more of that argument of how you think she actually could be in some legitimate trouble.
Well, look, by all accounts right now, I realize the media is not reporting this, but by all accounts, she did commit immigration fraud by marrying her brother to come to the United States of America. That is fraud. I believe that's a felony. It is without question a deportable offense. Anybody else, any normal person caught doing that with a sham marriage to your brother would be deported. That is the way that would work. Now, normally, I would agree with everyone else, because I'm the resident cynic, that nothing's going to happen to her, nothing happens to Democrats, nothing happens to politicians. But I know, now this I'm not guessing on, I know for a fact through my contacts on the Hill that there are several Democrats in the House who want Ilhan Omar, AOC, and Rashida Tlaib, and the rest of them, they want them shut up, they want them gone, they believe they are killing their party's chances for the future. And so I believe that if there was an actual push to prosecute Ilhan Omar and deport her for this, that you would very, very quietly, they couldn't let it known publicly, you would quietly have people like Nancy Pelosi on board with it. Yes, get her out.
Yeah, and I'm of the opinion, too, that if that moved forward, there would be some type of deal made from the standpoint of, I think that it actually, and I could be wrong, but I think for Representative Ilhan Omar, if something egregious were to happen and she were to lose that seat, I don't think she cares. I think she would grab onto the controversy. She would add it on to her resume and her activism, and she would use it for some other purpose.
She's got a job for life. Well, she's got a job for life with one organization or another. She's fine. She'll be fine. She's set for life. If she ends up losing that seat, it will just make her stronger.
That's true. Yeah.
Well, it will be, unless she's in Somalia, which is a total dump. So she can't be that strong if she's in that place.
I hear she's actually the real villain from the new Star Wars movie, The Rise of Skywalker. I know you use Palpatine's cackle at the end of the trailer, but I hear the big reveal is that's really been she's Darth Plagueis. She's been the one pulling the strings behind the scenes since The Phantom Menace. Right.
Well, I had no idea the Skywalkers were Jewish.
Jesse Kelly, as always, appreciate the. Actually, I have one more question. I do have one more question for you. I'm gonna one more question for you. Hey, I keep seeing the, and they pop up, you know, sort of like once a week. But I keep seeing these articles talking about Texas being in play, retiring individuals, this and that. You're there doing well. All the, I don't know, Drew, if you knew this, but when he got his show in Texas, yeah, all the other hosts just up and quit.
They just quit.
Yeah,
like half the other radio stations just turned off their signal.
Every station now is just Jesse. So, is there any truth or relevancy to these stories talking about the potential of Texas flipping, you know, not being the conservative bastion that it's been?
Yes and no. Now, it's not going to happen in 2020, but Texas is not as red as people like to think. Now, middle of the road Democrats have won this state statewide, and not so recent, not so distant past. Sure. I mean, they've done it here. But look, you can't change inevitability. Anytime there's a booming economy like Texas has, like California had, like Oregon had, like anytime there's a wonderful place, leftists will move there and ruin it. That sucks, and nobody wants to hear that. But they are going to flood Texas, and they are going to ruin it eventually. I mean, do you know how beautiful and perfect California is? California is paradise.
Yeah.
And they found a way to destroy that wonderful state.
Yep.
There's nothing they can't or won't destroy. And look, it's coming here too. It's not going to be in 2020, but it's coming eventually.
Yeah, they've managed to turn the metropolitan areas in California into essentially third world countries. It's crazy what's going on over there.
It's unbelievable.
The resurgence of diseases that have popped up in Los Angeles. It's absolutely. Competent Republicans should be able to point to Democratic leadership in major metropolitan areas and win every single election in the world. It doesn't make any sense to me. It's like, that's their policies. That's their leadership. Look at what they've done.
They do. Imagine if we actually had a media, too, who would do stories on every single major metropolitan area, all of which have been controlled by Democrats for like 50 years. And what an absolute disease, crime-ridden disaster they all are. Imagine if that comparison was out there. But, you know, yeah, this is the world we live in.
Jesse Kelly, when can people check out your show?
6 to 8 Eastern, every single Monday through Friday evening, available on iHeart Live or podcasted if you missed them all. It's just a magnificent show.
It really is. I mean, I have never listened to it, but I know it's magnificent. So,
well, obviously. Last night's was particularly special.
Take care, Jesse. Thanks, buddy. To you next week.
Real quick side note, I don't know if people know this, but so there's there's two theme parks attached to Disneyland. So there's Disneyland, and then there's Disney's California Adventure.
Oh, no.
Right, where you can, so Disney's California Adventure, you can go to Disney's California Adventure and, you know, you can visit, you know, facsimiles of things inside of California.
Right.
It's actually become more popular in California itself. Because when you go to Disney's California Adventure, you don't have to worry about cleaning your shoe.
Right.
Stepping over homeless people, getting stuck by a syringe.
Instead of Mr. Toad's Wild Ride, it's Avoid the Poo.
Exactly. Some people just go, well, I'm just going to go to California Adventure instead. Enjoy all the wonders that California has to offer in the way that it used to be.
In the final moments of the show, we do like to ask our producer, Sam, if
she's
learned anything on today's program. We make it a point. We strive to be not only entertaining, but also informative and educational. Sam is kind of our barometer for that.
What'd you learn today?
Well, around 6:15, I learned that Romans are monsters because they use scissors to cut pizza. John's a monster, too, because he uses scissors to cut steak.
You're right.
I can't.
I am a monster.
The least scary monster.
Embrace
ever.
Your monster.
Embrace your inner monster. Around 6:30, I learned that state health officials are investigating an outbreak of E. coli after a bunch of people fell ill after visiting the state fair.
E. coli.
I also learned about, at that time, General Mills recalling 600,000 pounds of gold medal flour. So apparently poop germs are taking over everything. Around 7:30, we were joined by RNC Deputy Secretary Michael Joyce, and I learned more about Lewandowski's beautifully passive-aggressive performance at the House Judiciary Committee's first hearing as part of its Trump impeachment.
It was pretty brilliant. It really was.
Amazing. I loved it.
Well, good job. And find all those things on the iHeartRadio app, and also follow our playlist that we have curated of music that you'll hear on the show, like bumper music, things like that, but also just a lot of our favorite songs. That's all available on the iHeartRadio app. Katie Pavlich joins us tomorrow, 6 to 9.
from the Air Mechanical Plumbing, Heating, and Electrical Traffic Center. I'm Chris Addison. Here is a look at the road sponsored by LifeLock with Norton. Not seeing any crashes out there at this time, but we still have plenty of congestion. 694 westbound.